All right, we're conducting this experiment in conversational exposition, verse by verse, in fair depth. I mean, I suppose we could go in greater depth, but I think we're treating it with pretty fair depth. And now we come to Exodus chapter 22, verses 18, 19, and 20. They deal with three death sentence crimes. Just boom, boom, boom. Now, but before you even read it, isn't it kind of interesting that these laws, it seems kind of random. First he was talking about property, then he was talking about the bride price of a virgin, and now he's talking about three crimes worthy of execution.
Yeah, is there any rhyme or reason to this? Is this just a random list that was put together?
Okay, the general theme is instructions given to judges. Mm-hmm. Apart from that general theme, you're kind of dealing with a structure that's kind of similar to something you might find in the book of Proverbs. Here's a proverb, there's a proverb. No necessary connection. Although you'll see it kind of sometimes dealing in sections with things, but no, generally you're just talking about various laws that we're dealing with. So what are some of the various laws that we're dealing with right here?
Well, it says there in verse 18, you shall not permit a sorceress to live. Whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. And he who sacrifices to any god, except to the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed.
Okay, wow. So what are our... boom.
Yeah.
What are our three capital crimes there? Number one?
Sorcery.
Right. Okay. Number two?
Bestiality.
Okay, and then number three?
Number three is worshiping a false god.
Right, idolatry through sacrificing to another god.
Wow.
All right, well, maybe we take these apart just one by one. The first one was sorceress. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. Now, it is interesting that here, and it's true in the original Hebrew as well, it's in the feminine. Did God think it was okay if you had a male sorcerer?
Well, I would say no.
Okay, then why does it highlight the female sorceress?
Is it more the idea of like a witch type of situation?
Well, that's true. And the old King James Version translates witch instead of sorceress. I mean, so the idea is similar. But I think one of the reasons why a woman would be highlighted here is because there would be naturally more sympathy given to a woman. And God says, no, even if a woman is convicted of sorcery. So, I mean, in sort of condemning the more difficult case, God is also condemning the less difficult case if a man was guilty of the same sort of sorcery.
Interesting.
So, now, listen, what is this kind of sorcery? I mean, first, you could say that it involves some kind of contact with dark or demonic powers or persons. A spirit medium, you know, an occultist, you know, what we would think of a witch or something like that. Secondly, it also had a connection with altered states through either drugs or potions or some other strange things. And in the ancient world, there was understood to be a connection between drug taking and occultic kind of practices.
So it'd be almost like, hey, you're part of us, you have to take this substance type mentality?
Yeah, and this substance will, by its hallucinations, bring you to another realm of consciousness. And there was thought to be a demonic spiritual connection with that kind of consciousness.
It wasn't like just like a magician, like a David Copperfield.
No. We're not talking about sleight of hand, you know, now you see it, now you don't.
Right.
We're not talking about that. We're talking about people who have some kind of connection, some kind of interaction with dark and demonic powers. Now look, notice this. The fact that God says you shall not permit a sorceress to live, it shows that this kind of communication is possible.
Interesting.
I mean, I don't know if people take that seriously enough, that there are people who really have some kind of interaction with the demonic realm, and not in a good way, but in a dark way.
Oh, I think about, you know, like the Ouija boards. Mm-hmm. I think about, you know, that movie that really was kind of a hit, that Paranormal Activity, which I don't know if it was real or not, but it was foreseen like it was this real... This house was, you know, there was a ghost in this
house.
Haunted in some way. And it's really out there. I mean, I feel like our culture is really into that kind of stuff. I feel like there's even something on Discovery Channel, like Ghostbuster type people that go into a house
well,
and connect
you know,
with
here
that.
It is. Here it is. People have an ache for the spiritual.
Yeah.
And especially for spiritual reality. And this is sometimes the great tragedy. They find spiritual reality in the demonic, but it's evil reality. Look, demonic spirits and the occultic stuff that's around them and the darkness that they bring, it's real, but it's totally malevolent. And that's why God said, for ancient Israel, I'll not allow a sorceress to live. You just put him out from the midst of them.
Is this one of the main reasons why when Saul would later consult a medium, it was a real big no-no at that time?
Oh, it was a big deal, and why Saul had to conceal his identity, you know, when he went and visited the witch of Endor.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's that same thing. But just to show how dangerous this sort of communication is with demons and darkness and all the rest, God says, no, it's going to be a death penalty. You shall not permit a sorceress to live. The combination of occult practices and drug-induced altered states, it was seen as being so destructive to the culture and to the moral fabric of ancient Israel that God gave this very strong law.
I love what G. Campbell Morgan says. He says, it is clearly against the will of God that in this life men should hold any communication with the spirit world, save that of direct fellowship with himself through his Son by the Holy Spirit.
Wow.
I mean, it really points back to just God's desire for us to worship him and to go before him and to have communication with him and him alone.
There is a world of the spirit, and there is a world of spiritual communication that God opens wide open to all who will come to him by faith in Jesus Christ. Yeah. But there is another world of the spirit that God says, no, this is forbidden. Don't go there.
But there's also connection, just briefly to go back, with drugs as well.
Yes.
And the idea of being hallucination, everything's also in the same type of realm of sorcery, drugs. You can almost point to the same verse for kind of the
absolutely. I mean, people point out that in the Greek translation of this and in the New Testament, the idea of sorcery, they even translate it with the Greek word pharmakia. Yeah. From which we get our word pharmacy, because of this association.
Mm.
And I suppose it's possible that the association with drug taking can be exaggerated.
Mm.
But at the bottom line, I think it's true that drug abuse, especially hallucinogenics, it opens up doors to the demonic that any sensible person would not go into.
Mm.
And so, yeah, there it is. Utterly be destroyed. Or like Campbell said, it is clearly against the will of God. Your Ouija board, clearly against the will of God.
Magic 8 ball that I shake? Will I, you know, what's...
Are you seeking that really for guidance? The magic 8 ball there? Yeah, no. If you're using it for real guidance, get rid of it. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so that's the first one. The shall not permit a sorceress to live. Number two on the list, what was it?
This bestiality, this is heavy. Whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death.
Now, surely it's speaking in a euphemism here, correct? I mean, lies with an animal.
I mean,
it's speaking
really
of having sexual congress or sexual relations with an animal. Yeah. I mean, by the way, shouldn't we learn something here? I mean, this is gross what the Bible's talking about here, but it's stated in the most tasteful way possible. Mm. And I mean, I think that kind of should instruct the way we speak about things. Yes, speak about them straightforwardly, but in the most tasteful way possible, with a sense of decorum.
Yeah.
So the if you think about that line there in verse 19, it could be phrased much more,
intensely, graphic, perhaps.
Or grossly, crudely might be a good word for it.
How, I mean, why would God speak against this?
Yeah.
Is it something that...
Doesn't this seem random?
It just kind of seems no duh.
Well, again, if we could transport ourselves back to ancient Israel, bestiality was common in the ancient world and in some systems, such as it seems to be among the Canaanites, where the Israelites were going.
Mm.
Bestiality even had a religious and a sacred significance.
Mm.
You know, we often don't appreciate it. Those Canaanites that the Israelites came in and dispossessed of the land, they were morally depraved.
Mm.
And part of their depravity was widespread sacred bestiality. And God just says, no. Whoever lies with an animal shall surely be put to death. It was prevalent among the Canaanites, and it seemed to have some sacred or religious significance.
Was it for pleasure purposes or for worship purposes?
I think they would combine them.
Combine them.
Combine them, yeah, I think so. And you know, don't we often want to take whatever we perceive as giving us pleasure and assign some worship significance to it, you know, to kind of give us more of an excuse, more of a rationalization to do it?
Definitely.
And look, I wish I could say that the day, you know, that this is unnecessary command in our present age. But listen, you got to know that there's a subculture out there you know, in the Western world and perhaps beyond. Look, I'm certainly no expert in these items, nor do I desire to be. But there's this subculture out there that practices and promotes bestiality. Mm. And we just look at it and sort of our stomach turns with revulsion. But, you know, I kind of got a logical question to ask you guys. If we were to say, no, that's you know, no, we'll draw the line there. Listen, if somebody's going to take this Bible and throw out biblical morality when it comes to sex, well, why should we draw the line there?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if already we hear things like, well, it feels good. You know, this makes me feel good, so I'm going to do it. What can you say to me that this feels good to me?
If the rule for our sexual conduct is, if it feels good, I'll do it, then why not?
Yeah.
I mean, just let's be honest.
Indulge in it.
Right.
I mean, take it to the nth degree.
Right. And listen, I'm not equating, for example, homosexuality with bestiality. I'm not equating the two. But I am saying, if you're going to throw off God's rules in one area, you know, okay, I know God says this about premarital sex, but who cares? Mm-hmm. I know God says this about homosexual practice, but who cares? I know God says this about multiple, you know, polygamy, but yeah. Who cares? On and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
Well, then why not this too? I mean, because it's all part of a cloth.
Yeah.
And if we're going to make up the rules, then we'll end up approving of everything.
Yeah. It's not a buffet cart. You can't pick and choose.
That's
if
right.
you're
going to
get rid of all of it, you know.
Well, and I think, you know, any rational, any thinking person realizes that if the measure of sexual morality is this, if it feels good, do it. It's destructive not only to the individual, but to the culture at large, and there's going to be a high price to pay. Mm-hmm. All right, let's just take a look at this last one. We can maybe look at it fairly quickly. What's verse 26?
It says, he who sacrifices to any god except to the Lord only, he shall be utterly destroyed.
Okay, so the first one was about sorcery or witchcraft. The second one about bestiality. Now, third here, we have idolatry by sacrifice, and he says destroy them. You know what I find interesting about this law is how rarely it was enforced in ancient Israel. And when you take a look at the subsequent history of Israel, there was a lot of idolatry.
Yeah.
There were always the high places and this to Baal and that to Asherah,
right.
All kinds of, you know, idolatry. Very rarely was this practice or was this law carried out, I should say. One exception I can think of was in 1 Kings chapter 18 with Elijah at Mount Carmel with the prophets of Baal.
Hmm.
There he executed the prophets
That's
of Baal.
Right.
And that was one of the few times that this law was actually observed. But yeah, that law, God said, no, you're going into a land where they worship other gods. You need to stay faithful to me. I don't want you to sacrifice to any other gods.
Yeah, I feel like we read that a lot. You know, this guy became king, but he did not tear down the high places.
That's right.
This guy came in, but he kept the high places.
And at the very least, he approved of or he sanctioned this sacrifice. So you have these three capital crimes. You end with this thing about not sacrificing to any other god. I mean, don't you think it's fascinating that idolatry is really shown? Well, let me do this. No, let's come back to idolatry. Let's say you can really tell the God that you worship by seeing what you'll sacrifice to.
Mm.
If you worship Jesus Christ, if you worship Yahweh, the covenant God of Israel, you'll sacrifice for him. You'll sacrifice of your time, your talent, your treasure. But whatever else is, if you have an idol in place of the Lord, you'll sacrifice for that, won't you, too?
Mm.
No, people sacrifice for all sorts of things that are their idols. We need to say, no. If somebody were to look at my life and see what I sacrifice for, they would see that I'm a worshiper of Jesus Christ and not anything else.
And someone would say, you know, if you want to know what people worship, look at their checkbook.
That's right.
You know, look at what they spend their money on or look at what they're giving their time to.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly.
Yeah. I had a question kind of backing up. You said that this was rarely enforced. Why is that? I mean, why wouldn't they enforce this? Is it kind of like part of God's mercy?
Well, maybe. I mean, Israel just fumbled this. They should have done it more. I don't know if I give you the answer I feel inside.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe somebody will email us and correct me on this. My sense is that there was just so much idolatry practiced in Israel that it just seemed overwhelming.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Where to begin?
Yeah. Because when it was enforced with Elijah, with the prophets of Baal at Mount Carmel, it's horrifying. Elijah takes a bunch of the prophets of Baal down by a creek and he slaughters them.
Yeah.
It's like, you gasp, oh, good heavens. Yeah, but it was, in fact, rarely carried out.
Wow, wonderful.
All right, well, that ends this. Next one, we'll go on to a bunch of laws having to do with compassion, but that ends this section here.